Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your Wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Well, hello world. Welcome to the Wealth DNA radio show. Today's April 25th, 2011, and it's 8 o'clock in sunny Arizona. We're here with our batteries fully recharged after an important holiday weekend for billions of people around the world, and you're probably one of them. It's the most important holiday in the Christian calendar and one of the three major festivals for the Jews. And they still have a couple days left in Passover. Well, hopefully our last show on the first commandment of investing got you more conscious of how you act or react when the market goes up or down. Because that's one thing it's good at, it's going up or down. Toward the end of the show, we'll take a little time and kind of review how you did following those rules or in paying a little more attention maybe than you have in the past. Remember what I said about the first commandment? It's simple, but not easy. And I should remind you, there are archives available of all past shows, so if you have no clue what the first commandment is, look up first commandment in your search or send me an email. I can forward you the link. Well, before we jump into today's topic, let me cover some housekeeping. First of all, as you heard, you're listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and I look forward to having you join us every second and fourth Monday of the month. If you want to get a reminder directly to your email, there's two ways you can do that. One is send me an email, and we do send out an email 1 or 2 days in advance of the show. We'll keep you posted about future shows and events that we're doing. Or in the upper left-hand side of the screen, you'll see a little follow button. Just click on that, and you will get reminders of the various shows on the Boomer and Babe network. This show, as the name implies, focuses on building your wealth and also understanding your wealth DNA. The good news, it's not like your genetic DNA. You can actually change it over time because we're all born with the same wealth DNA. None of us were born rich or poor. Our parents may have been, but we weren't born rich, poor, or good at investing or poor at investing, good at spending or bad at spending. We can change our wealth DNA. Anyway, during the radio show, we welcome you to ask questions. You can either enter the chat room, and you know, since they've changed the screen, it's not as clear to me how this whole thing works, but it looks like it. Oh, if you just log in there or just show yourself as a guest, you'll have a comment screen right below my fortunately slightly improved picture there. We had me looking pretty heavy there a couple weeks ago. But anyway, under that, you'll see a comment section. You can enter comments, and we will see that. Our producer will be able to also have you come on online if you'd like. So, and how you do that? You call in 917-388-4162. Yes, that's the call-in number. Let me repeat that, 917-388-4162. And you can either listen on that number or, as I said, you can ask to come on to the show. Our producer, Pete, will get a chance to chat with you in the back room. And then at an appropriate time, he'll ask us to take a little break and listen to the questions. So either way, comments by the chat window or just call on in, and we'll gladly have you on the show. Now, last month, we touched on an important topic, entrepreneurs and small business. You'll recall I chatted with Pete Peters, our producer here at Boomer and the Babe Network. He shared some great quotes about entrepreneurs and also the lessons on building a brand. Remember, one of my favorites was, if it's to be, it's up to me. And that's kind of the entrepreneurial spirit. It turns out the entrepreneurial revolution, well, that's going to be tough on a Monday morning. Entrepreneurial revolution he talked about is key to building wealth. Well, but who does it build wealth for? Well, obviously the entrepreneurs that build their businesses. And as their businesses grow and thrive and hopefully continue to do well in the ups and downs of the market, those entrepreneurs build their wealth. Well, how about all of their suppliers, contractors, service companies, and people looking for jobs? They also earn some money in this process. How about office owners? See, entrepreneurs eventually rent office space. That's why most politicians, whether they're in the U.S. or elsewhere, agree that they are the engine of growth of the economy. Yep, entrepreneurs and small business, that's the engine of growth for the economy. And by the way, it's not easy to get 2 to 3 politicians to agree on anything. So this is really a major area of importance, right? Well, let's see. That's what our show is about today. Our guest today works for the U.S. federal government, and his role is to provide a communication channel between small business and the congressman he works for. You see, large companies might be able to afford a lobbyist to reach a congressman or senator and push forward their agenda. But for smaller businesses, that's just not an option. Our guest is Michael Jamison, the business and commerce liaison working for a Republican representative. Well, he happens to be a Republican, but the representative, Trent Franks, in Arizona's 2nd District, who happens to be the congressman for the district where we're headquartered. So, yes, welcome today, and give a good radio welcome to Michael Jamison.
It's good to be here, even though it's an early Monday morning.
And some technical difficulties today.
Yeah, well, we're set to go, so.
Okay, excellent. And I noticed that in your prior role, just until you stepped into this role as business and commerce liaison, you were actually the campaign manager for Congressman Franks, and you obviously must have done a good job. He's been reelected, and you're in a new role.
Yeah, the congressman's been in this district for 4 terms, for 8 years, so it's a really conservative district, and it fits the congressman very well. So I came in 2 cycles ago and ran his campaign. I've known Trent for many, many years. So I came from California, and I love it here in Arizona. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. Now let's ask our listeners, and some of you that want to answer online, that's great, but did you realize that congressmen and senators have a business liaison for smaller companies to communicate issues with that representative? I probably could see a lot of heads shaking if we were on live TV or something, or others with blank looks. You probably just never thought about it. Well, that is not always the case, as you're going to learn.
Yeah. It's a unique position. In fact, I'm not aware of any other congressional staff, at least in this area and what I've dealt with in my political career, that had an individual dedicated to just reaching out to the business community, both small and large, in a liaison capacity. Usually it's the other way around, where a lot of businesses are trying to get in front of and communicate to the congressman the issues that are impacting them, and we decided to kind of turn it on its head and give me a full-time position to go out and reach out to the business community. So it is a little bit different.
Well, you know, if you were meeting a group for the first time, as I mentioned your role and your title, if you will, but how do you introduce your role? Because it isn't something that's commonly found or that all of us would expect to see. So how do you introduce yourself here introducing yourself to a group as you are this morning?
Basically, I start most of the people in this area of District 2, Arizona, obviously know the congressman as a very conservative social issue congressman. He's very concerned about the pro-life issues and the family issues. What they're not aware of, though, many a times, is his business background. He's which is a rarity for a congressman. He's had to sign the front of a paycheck. He's had to make payroll on a weekly basis. He started out very young as actually in the oil business, drilling. He was a wildcatter and became very successful in that area. He's also an entrepreneur. He has a couple patents, and so he understands all those issues and how much the federal government impacts that. And so it's pretty unique in that he's got a perfect voting record in the business community. I like to remind people that he voted against all the bailouts, even under the Bush administration. So mm-hmm. even under the administration in the Republican-controlled House, when we thought they were spending like drunken sailors. We come to find out that they can actually spend more. But, so he's very conservative, and it's he understands, like you said, that the engine, the economic engine, is the small business, and especially here in Arizona, I believe it's over 90% of all businesses in Arizona are small businesses. So
I think you're absolutely right
on
that. Now, Representative Franks represents some geographic district, and I called it District Number 2, and that's what it's officially called, which happens to include Verado, where I'm based. Would you share with our listeners what that geographic area is? Because most of us don't really follow the map of how those geographical districts are assigned, but what kind of geographical territory does that cover?
Well, first off, he has one of the largest ones of all the congressmen. The biggest concentration of the population, though, is Glendale, Peoria. It goes a little bit west out to Goodyear and the very edge of Buckeye, Arizona. And it kind of swings up into Sun City, Sun City West, Surprise. Then it heads out to Wittenberg, and it goes all the way up to Kingman, and so we have the whole Mojave County, and then it follows a small little river up into the Hopi Indian Reservation. So we also have that as part of our district. So it's a very large district, and there was two areas in Arizona that we had growth in the last 10 years, and that one of the areas was the west and the northwest area of Phoenix.
Absolutely.
In particular, which includes Trent's district, and then I think it was the southeast area, Gilbert and Chandler and all those areas were the largest two growth areas. So every 10 years our census is taken, and that's how every state then turns around, and based upon population, you have new representatives, or you lose one or you gain one based upon population shift. And
correct.
Arizona, we gained one, almost two. So the districts will be rewritten this year, and then so in 12 we'll have all representatives, and we'll have one new additional one. We'll have somewhat new lines, district lines. So
exactly. Okay. Yeah. No, I happened to get online over the weekend just in preparation to kind of get a feel for it, but it really is. I knew about the portion here in Maricopa County, is with the Glendales and Peorias and the Sun Cities, as we affectionately refer to them. But didn't realize it goes all the way up into that, the whole Mojave, as you said. And I guess there's a little bit of, I wasn't even familiar with the La Paz County and a Coconino stretch that you, as you said, as it heads over east to the Hopi.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, at the time we met, it was around the time of the elections, quite frankly, as I recall, you mentioned you're not currently, and of course you were before, involved in the political aspect of the re-elections and those kinds of things in your role. Is that correct? So that when it comes to elections and all, you're not sidelined to go work on campaigning and getting buttons out and getting people to vote. You're still focused on business.
Yes, I'm a full-time staff on the congressional staff, and basically, your district offices are designed for constituent services. So, for example, if you have problems with the VA. Your veterans issues or Social Security, regardless of your political affiliation, or even if you vote,
sure.
You're still a constituent to the congressman. He still represents you in D.C. And so the district office, it's staffed by people that do nothing but service the district and the issues that are impacting the constituents. And
right.
In my role, that's my role, and so I stay focused on business community. I'm not raising campaign money or anything like that. I'm not soliciting any funds or anything. I'm out there reaching out to them and asking them, okay, what are the issues that are impacting you? What are your concerns, and how can the congressman help you?
Absolutely. But on that note, you're not involved in the political side, if you will, but let me at least ask you one politically oriented question, because it's going to come up during the show if I don't ask it. Senator John Kyle has announced he's not going to run for re-election, and obviously one of the potential candidates would be Representative Franks. He's decided not to run for that position. Is that kind of a hint that he's got some other mission in Congress he wants to continue? Can you give us a feel for that?
It was a very difficult decision for him, an open seat like that. I think, you know, there's an old saying that every congressman wakes up in the morning and sees themselves as the next senator or U.S. president. So a lot of them have that kind of ambition. It was a struggle for him. I think it was based upon, if anything else, family. He's got two young children, and he does travel quite a bit back and forth each weekend to be with his family. So that's a hardship. Running for U.S. Senate statewide is a very difficult and very expensive. I think the cost factor was also involved. So he has indicated that he's not going to run. One of the other issues was he has such a what's the word I'm looking for? The seniority in the House that he's now got some chairmanships and subcommittees that he's very much concerned about. So he would lose all that by going to the Senate. He'd be a senator, but he'd still be a junior senator, a freshman.
Correct.
And it takes a while to establish that kind of seniority and stuff. So I think that was the case, and he's in a perfect position right now where he feels he can make effective changes. So
well,
he decided not to run.
That. Yeah, I mean,
but he's still running for the House. He'll still run for the House again. It's not like he's not running at all. It's just that he's not going to run for the Senate race.
He's not going to change position. He's going to stay where he is and continue to do the good work he's doing. Okay.
Yes, correct.
Let's talk now a little bit more about your role, business liaison. Does that mean you work with businesses in our district, and obviously you're going to focus on the district, to understand their issues and help to resolve them and escalate them? Tell us a little bit about that.
It has some our first intention, again, was to just make sure that the business community really understood their representative and how pro-small business he is and how much he understands that it's drives the economy. He's a capitalist to the core. He really believes in everybody should be able to make money. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing evil in its inherent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he believes if it's done fairly and honestly, and there's a handshake, both parties are happy, and both people say thank you.
Correct.
My role is basically to reach out to that community and understand the issues. Each business has a little bit different federal regulations that impact them, that they're concerned about, that they'd like to see changed or completely eliminated. So at appropriate opportunities, we have district days where I bring in the business community to sit down and talk to the congressman. And so I kind of vet those groups, associations, as well as the business, individual businessmen and women who need to get in front of the congressman to express their issues. I also, from time to time, getting out into the community, and we go do a tour of different facilities and businesses in the community. So that's part of my role.
Sure, also. To get to know the businesses, help him get to know them. And but, quite frankly, and I'm sitting here going, how come I didn't know that he formerly ran businesses and the patents, oil business. I mean, I just never knew those things. I guess I didn't read enough detail. Or maybe he doesn't bring that up enough in his campaigns. I don't know. And I'm not trying to advise in any way, shape, or form. But to me, as a business person, that is really strong information. I'm hoping you get that message out as you talk to business people that that's kind of the genesis of why you're doing what you do and that it is unusual.
Yeah. I mean, for example, last year I visited over 200 businesses, probably collected about 400 business cards. So I'm trying to be very proactive out in the community. One of the unintended consequences have been, though, I've been able to now kind of network with businesses,
right,
saying, hey, you've got this product. Well, I know a guy that probably needs your product, and I've been able to help him in that regard. It's kind of neither the congressman nor I kind of expected that, but it's been an added blessing, if you will, to be able to do that. So that's kind of – I'm always – almost carrying around in my back pocket everybody else's business card.
Right.
Because, again, if we're helping business grow, we're actually doing our role like it probably was originally intended, is for the congressional our government to get out of the way and help business grow, not
be a hindrance.
Yeah,
exactly, which we most people tend to think of government as getting in the way, and that's one of the reasons I definitely wanted to get you on the show, is to let listeners know and get the message out that, you know what, there are ways that government works that most of us are just not aware of. You know, I go back to the moment or the time we met, and it's pretty much the moment when you said business liaison. You know, and I felt like taking my palm of my hand, hit myself in the forehead, and saying, I think I could have had a V8, because it was one of those things. I said, wait a minute, I just never thought about, you know, a business liaison. And wait a minute, I've got issues that I'm trying to get through and deal with government people, and I just never thought of looking up and finding these business representatives. And then you blew my bubble and said, well, you're not going to find them with your two senators, and you're not going to find them in other districts that that our business happens to touch. I'm pretty much the only one. There's something wrong with this picture, Michael. I mean, what can we do to change this?
Well, I, again, you probably have to. And some of them, you're going to have to change your representative, because they just don't have that mindset of a small business and really are true pro business representatives. I don't know. Maybe we'll get the word out to the other congressional staffs of how we believe it's been very productive and very helpful. Most small business, they don't have the time, like you said in the beginning of the show, to have their own lobbyists. They're not sure of how to go about confronting their congressmen and their representatives on the issues that are impacting their small business.
Sure.
So a lot of what I do is encourage them and really find out what their issue is, and at the appropriate opportunity, I get them on two people on staff or 200. If it's an issue impacting them, that the congressman, and they're all pretty much the same issues, but my feeling is it's good for the congressman to put a face, to that issue and how it's impacting somebody in his own district, his own state.
Right.
So, to me, it's also important for the congressman to keep his pulse on the community with the face-to-face.
Sure.
To put a face to these issues, quite frankly.
Well, now, I totally agree with you, but, when I just think of it from a numbers viewpoint, we've got 435 congressmen and 100 senators. So one business liaison, so there's one congressman in that whole bunch.
There might be more. I'm not sure.
Well, I just haven't found any. I've kind of looked, but if that's the case, we're talking 0.2% of the representatives take the business mindset of helping. As I said, small business, the engine of growth, and every politician agrees to that. And yet, what we're saying is, it's important to growth, but we're not going to do anything about it.
All right. Right.
We're not going to really,
That's reflected in a lot of the legislation, too. So you're right in that regard.
So, I look at it from what we can do about it. I mean, one of the things I've actually started to obviously get the word out and bringing you on the show is one of those aspects. But I want to do some articles on that topic that just says, okay, small business, engineer growth, and, who's doing what about it? Because
the biggest hindrance is the government.
Exactly.
And I'll go back to the political side. Having run campaigns most of my career, I was always looking for, and it's very difficult to find somebody who's had a business background willing to run for office. There's not very many business representatives in the U.S. Congress, because the business community, by and large, you just don't want to run for office. It's difficult to find.
A different mentality. Sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I agree.
It's very much a different mentality. But it's very much needed. I mean, when you have to sign that front of that paycheck and make payroll, you have a different view on taxes. You have a different view on regulations and
absolutely
legislation that's, makes more of a hindrance for the startup of business. So,
Correct.
I can only blame ourselves for lack of representation.
Right,
because we're not having those kind of people run for those offices. That it is critical and extremely important that we have more business minded individuals representing us. So.
I totally agree with that. That's what I'm kind of looking for, is what are the ways, I mean, maybe part of it is each of our listeners, each of the people we touch base with, is need to get the message to their representatives, and that might, you know, if they happen to be in the second district, then they would, you know, first of all, send the kudos to Trent Franks, or they would send a note to the two senators to say, hey, you know, this is a good idea. He's leading by example. Let's have more follow that example. You know, frankly, your point's a good one. It'd be great if we had more business-minded people in Congress rather than legislators who are lawyers. It's, what, 65
yeah.
or 75%
lawyers.
Well,
you just took the words right out of my mouth.
Well, that's very unsanitary, I learned. But see, in all seriousness, that's, you know, it would help. But what you know, what you're doing makes a lot of sense, even if. Representative Franks were a typical lawyer, as most representatives are, but he has a person representing business and bringing him that information and helping him develop that mindset. You know, that'd be a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, many of the congressmen that I know do have what we call district days, where they do bring in the business community and, you know, get input from them. So I know quite a few conservative legislators, and that's quite a bit of their agenda. When they come back from out of session in Congress, they go back to their districts. A lot of them do set up that kind of meetings. But again, it's how do they advertise it? How do they get the word out that they're actually, you know, want to do that? So
correct, because those district days,
It
could just invite regular constituents, right, to come and gripe about Social Security, come and gripe about something else, right?
Right.
So if it's not business focused,
they'll open up their office on a Saturday and say, "I'm going to sit here and make a public announcement that they're going to do that." And I don't want to sound like I'm the only one doing this, but there's different avenues. But at the same time, it is pretty unique that you have a full-time person on staff who does nothing but concentrate on the business community.
Oh, exactly. You know, I'm definitely, you know, sending kudos in that direction, and I'm obviously lucky to have my business in Representative Frank's district. I mean, that would be a totally different picture if I were outside the district, and I'm obviously taking advantage of that, and we've been in touch,
right.
and you've been helping me, and we'll talk more about that. But let's talk about some of the concerns you hear from your constituents, and I'm talking specifically from the businesses. What are you touched on one that I guess I don't think of right away, which is the regulation side. But what are the things, as you meet with business, what are the typical concerns you hear back?
I think, like all, both our families, our own personal finances, as well as our business, we don't spend more than we take in unless we get a loan, and that loan has an interest on it. And this overspending is stifling the economy. I think I've talked to many of business owners who said, you know, I've got money to invest in my company. I'm holding back. They're all sitting on it. Even the big boys are sitting on their money.
Absolutely.
And I don't know, you know, there's always been uncertain times. So I don't know if it's necessarily because the uncertainty of the economy. As you know, the market's always going up and down.
Correct.
It's always changing. That's why people make money on the market. They're betting on the change.
Correct.
So I don't, to me, it's more of the uncertainty of the debt. I got to believe the debt is just on everybody's mind, which is finally a good thing. And we've been ignoring it for so many, you know, last 20 years, I think, or more. And we go through those kind of cycles also, that if you look back historically.
Mm-hmm.
The debt is always on everybody's mind. The government's the only body who can print money. They're the only ones who can cause inflation, and its ugly head is coming. If not now, it already is. We call it different things now. We kind of cover it up. But the impact of the gas prices, which are inflationary, obviously.
Sure. I've seen it.
The regulations come up a lot. I think up last year here in Arizona in particular, the housing market was a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
The real concern was the commercial side, was it going to crash?
Right, right. You know, the whole commercial real estate market, sure.
Yeah, it was a big concern. I don't see it as quite as much on everybody's, the business community's mind as it was a year ago. Obviously, there's no growth going, and there's a lot of empty opportunities, I guess you could call them out there.
Yeah. Now, every problem is an opportunity. Good point.
Yeah. But there's not the fear of the crash as I was feeling as little as, you know, 3 or 4 months ago.
Agreed.
I don't know if they think it's, you know, it's been alleviated. It's just not the paramount issue. I had a shift in my dealings with the business community to the debt and what's going to happen with the debt ceiling and with the spending that's going on at Congress.
Mm-hmm. You know, on that topic, let me kind of steer you in one, or let me ask you a question. I'm going to steer you, but one of those questions, my future guests, and I didn't think about this, I'm not sure I forewarned you this question, is Kimber Lanning, who runs Local First here in Arizona, with her whole, and I'm sure you've met her and you know about her initiative,
yes.
The whole idea of, you know, bringing business locally, which I know that clearly Representative Franks is a strong proponent of, and, you know, whether it's small banks versus, you know, the big guys that are internationally based and all those kinds of things. But the question that seems to be kind of number one on her agenda right now is the sales tax discrepancy, let me put it, or what some would term the unfairness, that the local business is paying a sales tax because they have a retail location versus the Amazons and the eBays and wherever else, that I can buy things and not pay a sales tax. And you know, so therefore, if my shipping cost is less than my sales tax, I now have a price advantage by buying from the big guys. Is that a topic you're hearing about from business?
No, not really. I think because, again, I deal with the federal issue, so that usually doesn't come up because that's pretty much I guess you got the federals could be taxing the big companies, internet, stuff like that.
Correct, and that's why I'm curious. I think of it as obviously a local or a state tax issue, but at the same time, it's because they're not taxed. They're kind of like, you know, in internet land. You know, it's off somewhere in the cyberspace or whatever we call it these days. So I was just curious if that is brought up as kind of one of those that the federal government should, you know, but that would mean more regulation. So it was one of those two-sided issues. I probably would never have thought of bringing it up at the federal level. That's why I was curious if it comes up.
I can't say that it does as much as, I mean, if I had some state issues, we have a gentleman that's on the congressman's staff who's state representative Steve Montenegro.
Right.
And so usually I'll go, hey, you could go talk to Steve about that issue.
Okay.
And again, I'm not a policy person either. I'm more trying to discover what the needs are and then go back and bring those issues before our policy people that are out of D.C. And also, you know, create opportunities for the congressman to hear from his constituents and the business community in particular.
Correct. And that's why I'm asking what some of the issues are coming up. But I guess I shouldn't be surprised to hear the deficit and inflation and regulations would be major concerns. And as you said, the commercial real estate market, I think we've been pretty lucky in that potential crash didn't happen, and business is picking up reasonably well, so that hopefully it does not.
Yeah.
That would be. Let's talk about some of the issues you've been involved in this role. Obviously, you've become a kind of a conduit of information in that direction, but I'm sure you also get involved in helping businesses or in more actively than pursuing certain issues. Are there some you can tell us a little bit about?
We've had different companies come to us. They've all been really, for example, really small little companies that have
mm-hmm.
you know, got a new invention, either, you know, has some kind of looking to get a military, you know, defense contract or something,
okay.
Ask for our help. And usually what we can do as a congressional staff is create opportunities for them to get in front of the right people who make those decisions.
Cool.
That's, and we don't really endorse, we can't endorse a product or anything like that. But obviously, if it's something that's, you know, can help our armed services and protect our men and women who are protecting us, you know, Congressman Trent Banks is on the Armed Services Committee.
Good point.
And so it's one of his major issues is national defense. So he deals a lot with that issue. It's one of his top priorities. So we do try to create opportunity for the business community to talk to the appropriate person in the government. For example, we can also do for constituents if they're having a problem with a certain government agency. We can, as the congressional staff out of the district office, do what we call a letter of inquiry. And that letter of inquiry requires that department to respond. We kind of shine the light on them a little bit. The Congress passed some legislation that said, if you're a federal agency and we've got a constituent with a concern, we'll write a letter on their behalf asking for resolution, and they have to answer our letter. Now we might not like the answer,
right?
But we do have. That's one of the tools that the congressman does have for his constituents.
Boy, I'm glad you told me that one. You can bet I'm going to take advantage of that as we talk some more in the next few months. See, there's a lot of selfish interest in this conversation. I got to tell you, I'm learning, and
great.
I knew that you existed. You know, most people don't. Hey, you touched on a very good point. I apologize. I should have asked this earlier for our listeners, is what are some of Representative Frank's priorities? You mentioned the one, armed services, and so therefore the whole military arena is clearly one of his priorities. What are some of his other priorities? He can't do everything, so he's got to focus on, you know, four or five things, I assume.
Yes, that's true. In the armed services arena, he's been the biggest proponent of the Strategic Defense Initiative, the SDI, what it was originally mm-hmm. called. Back in Reagan's day, it was called the
right.
Star Wars by the media,
yep.
dubbed the Star Wars. But the ability that has happened for us to be able to knock out nuclear missiles by a laser. And we've been extremely successful on that, the whole advanced Patriot missiles defense, working very closely with the Israel. Has an even more advanced one. So Trent's a big proponent and a strong supporter of Israel. Probably it is the only democracy in the Middle East.
Right.
So, and he also does it for his own religious purposes. His eschatology is he's very pro-Israel. So, but the national defense, securing the borders is a big issue with him, and that is also a national defense issue. His concern is always in public. He'll mention a dirty bomb, which is a small nuclear device that probably weighs 300 pounds and
right.
almost a little bit bigger than a suitcase size, can easily be brought across the border and probably in a bale of marijuana and not have any problems. So he's concerned about the border based on his national defense issue as well as immigration, but immigration is not an issue compared to him as much as national defense, you know, secure border.
But they are related, as you said.
Yeah. He's definitely a very, again, a social conservative. He doesn't flinch at all with his pro-life statements, no matter what the audience he's in. He believes that life begins at conception, so he's very much an opponent of Roe v. Wade and the Supreme Court's decision. He hopes to see, that he hopes to see that overturned someday. And he bases that, you know, on his own religious convictions as well as, you know, the Constitution, you know, said that would protect life and liberty. And he believes that it was a God-given right, not a state right or individual rights that we have those freedoms, but they're God-given. So the social issues are the religious freedom actually is one. He's really done a lot across the world for Christians in particular being persecuted in Muslim countries and other during the days of the communist countries that were doing all the religious persecution. So that is a of high priority of the congressman.
So those it's are something some of the we take for granted a little bit living here, don't we?
Yes, yeah. If you travel, you also realize some of the freedoms we all do take for granted very much. So, but the social issues are just a really high priority for him. He believes in this sanctity of marriage. And those issues are very, very much. School choice is one of his big ones. When he was a state legislator here in Arizona, he got past the tax credit that the individuals can give to.
Okay.
And then the parents can choose what school they want to send their kids to.
Right.
That was challenged by the ACLU. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I think it was just a week or two ago that the Supreme Court upheld the decision for the parents' rights. And the tuition tax credit. So a great victory. Millions of kids have been helped because of that. A lot of your charter schools depend upon that kind of contributions. And, so if it's cheaper for the state, actually, to not have students in their system. Private can do it with about half as cheap. So
right.
School choice. Vouchers, all those are very high priority for him.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at something, yeah, even school choice, you compare that to kind of the business environment, you say, wait a minute, that's opening up competition.
Correct.
It's getting away from a government monopoly running the schools. It does allow for choice and it allows for competition, and it gets drives toward efficiency. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's very consistent with his pro-business stance.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, I believe that if you're I've come to believe that if you're a social conservative, you're probably really a true fiscal conservative. Also, we've gone in the Republican Party for many years with the assumption that you can be a fiscal conservative but not a social conservative, and to me the two are so linked together.
Thanks.
That
interesting.
I think you have a greater chance of a representative if. If he claims to be both, that he's going to in the tough times when they're putting all the pressure on you to vote for increase of the debt or anything, that you're going to probably cave in at some point in time.
Right. So. Fair point. Interesting analogy between those two. I hadn't thought of it, but it does make a lot of sense. Now, I realize, and I think most people realize, that things at the government level happen at kind of what I'll call a glacial pace. They don't happen overnight, and so your time in this job, it's going to be hard to say, you've had 1,500 successes, just because the seeds you plant and the things you start working on may take not weeks or months, they may take years or decades to ultimately get done. Just like your example of the the school choice is something that you can sign a bill, but by the time and that took a while to get done, but then after a while it gets stopped, and we see a lot of Arizona legislation. But anyway, back to the point of change happens slowly. Are there some projects that you've been involved in, or issues, or small businesses that you've dealt with that you can share some of the success stories already?
Before I even go to that, I'd like to, I think
sure.
That was one of the, if you want to really look at the big picture, what happened in our last election cycle with Obama getting elected, you had the first time in a very long time that all three branches of the legislative side were all controlled by one party. They were, So change and so legislation happened very quickly because there wasn't any checks and balances. Our founding fathers included the checks and balances, and it's always been very healthy to have that opposition party. Therefore, things are. It does take a little bit longer, but in the end, you probably have a better product. And so, I think that's why with the phenomena that happened in those 2 years, and why America turned around, and all of a sudden, in 2 years later, they're going, wait a minute, that's too much change, because it really was, there was no checks and balances. They were having hearings and passing legislation with no review at all, and less than 24 hours at most of the time, and there was no openness about it. So I think the American people, the public, the American voting public, change that very quickly, and of course, I think they're still moving in that direction. some of the successes right now, at least if you look at Congress, we've really been able to, since it's only one-third of the process of getting a bill made into law, the only thing we've done is slow down that machine. It's still, we still don't have the ability to pass anything significant because of the other two branches, the U.S. Senate and the presidency, obviously, can
stop things.
The Senate not pass it, the same version as the House, and then obviously the president can veto it, even if both those branches, the representative branches, voted for something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's only real. Our real success has only been that we're only halfway to a third down in our changing of what's going on in D.C. I know a lot of people are frustrated with the Congress right now, but they can only do so much when you've got a Senate and a president who's already told them they'll veto anything that has any semblance of balance to the budget or debt ceiling. We're counting our successes right now that we've slowed the whole process down.
I clearly am seeing that message that there's more and more consciousness that the spending is catching up and inflation is kicking in. Despite, I think the government does a great job of we talked about this on the show, by the way, so this isn't something that I'm kind of presenting today. We've talked about the whole inflation picture, and we've talked about, you know, what real inflation is versus what's officially published, and if we looked at the old basket of goods and a number of different things. So on past shows, we've shared and had some guests on talking about how the numbers that come across is, well, we've taken out energy and food, and as long as you don't eat or drive anywhere, prices aren't going up very much.
I didn't even know that.
Absolutely. Those prices are fine. But just don't eat and don't drive anywhere, okay? Plane.
I've wondered, because I've been keep asking people, well, how's inflation? Where is it at? Isn't it going to hit us? I'm thinking, wait a minute, it's hitting my pocketbook every day when I'm trying to buy gas and look at the food prices.
Correct. Yeah, no, I had, to name names, Don Goldwater was on one of the first ones talking about inflation, and he shared with us, he didn't have the numbers in front of him, but I've looked them up since, but inflation, if we use the old basket of goods, and you and I are old enough to remember when even on TV when the news would come on and talk about inflation, they'd have a little basket with, you know, stuff either in there and being wheeled along of, you know, kind of the grocery shopping cart basket. But if we went back to that old method, it'd be about 8 or 10% right now. Versus the real low rates. There were some three to four major changes that took place in the inflation measure. So anyway, the government's kind of keeps that measure down, but I think most people are feeling the inflation enough that they're starting to recognize that, wait a minute, you mean this deficit spending causes inflation and I could have problems buying things and, you know, and affording life, even though the numbers are saying that's all fine. So, yeah, we do talk about that, and I got to tell you, that consciousness, you're starting to sense it, I think, in the political arena. I think you're starting to have politicians start to notice, which I guess is one of those things that's a good positive.
And you may have, and I guess if you have regular guests, but you may have guests going, well, why is he interviewing or talking to somebody that's involved in politics? Well, guess what? Your wealth is so much tied into what they do.
You bet.
I mean, it's something that you need. And I guess that's part of my message, too. And it is so integral into your success of being business, you know, in your investments and everything else, you need to be registered to vote. You need your voice to be heard. There are bad representatives out there because you allow them, you know.
Correct.
We're still in a democratic republic that people are elected and they can be unelected. Your vote does count. It makes a huge difference. And, I'm a big proponent of you know, people getting involved in the process, obviously.
Well, and you know, this is where the business person is a person, and they're just, you know, a single voter. But to the extent that their business affects a lot of jobs and financial, the economy, all of those things, and that's where it's kind of frustrating that there's not enough voice of business in government and ways other than, you know, folks like yourself that we can talk to and say, hey, look, you know, my company and our growth depends on these kinds of, you know, whether they're tax, regulatory, deficit, inflation kinds of issues to help us bubble those up, other than waiting for the election and, you know, having to do some sort of lobbying or those kinds of things. So, you know, it is frustrating that all we have is our individual vote, and yet as businesses, we should be able to get our voices understood more strongly because we do represent an economic engine to the economy. So that's part of our message today is you know, we've got to take advantage of that and find ways to do it and complain to the other representatives that they aren't listening to business enough.
Yeah, correct. Very much. It's so critical that, and I'm, you know, I get to do it as a full-time job, but I'm always out there looking for the business community for their issues that are directly impacting them. And again, I like to get them in front of my congressman so he can put a face to that issue and support for him. It gives him ammunition, actually, to go back to Congress. It actually helps him a lot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, you know, you got to know what's going on the ground, and if you're spending your whole time in Washington, which he does not, but many of them do, and you don't have that ear to the business world, as most of them do not, that makes it very, very difficult. Hey, one question on the businesses that talk to you, contact you, you get to meet. I'm assuming that the larger businesses are not the ones that are going to contact you because they probably have that option of lobbying. They have the option of contacting a lobbyist or contacting some of the congressmen and senators. But is that a fair point? Is it going to be primarily the entrepreneurs, the small and the medium businesses that contact you?
Well, it's the ones that I contact, so that's kind of my focus. I don't necessarily focus on the larger guys. But a lot of your medium-sized businesses obviously are a part of associations.
Right. Okay.
And I've gotten to know all the associations that I can think of. I hope to find more out there. Usually, that's a good fit because the executive director of the association, it's important for them to have that their members understand that they have access to their congressman. And I want my congressman to know that these business men and women coming in today, sitting around the table, represent, you know, 100 other businesses all across the state that have the same concern. Again, it gives added weight. So, and that was going to be my second point is, you know, you need to make sure you elect and get involved in the political process and vote for a pro-business kind of legislator. But you also need to be involved in associations that represent your issues because they do add weight to the individuals that go into that room by the sheer numbers of other businesses that they represent. It's an important function. I utilize it to our benefit. Again, they've done the research. They know the issues.
Right.
They know the bills that are impacting their group the most. And we listen to them. We really do. It's an important aspect for his pro-business stance to understand those communities. So the larger corporations do have Washington D.C. lobbyists, and they get to know the D.C. staff and policy wise and what legislation. But again, I can do something that the D.C. Lobbyists can't do, and that's get some face time with the congressman in the district without all the
noise
commotion going on in D.C. So, and during our district days and stuff like that. So. Yeah. Some of them have realized, well, I'm even a better contact than what they have as their lobbyist in D.C.
Sure. That's an interesting point.
So
okay.
They can develop a personal relationship with the congressman.
Absolutely. That's interesting.
But conversely, I don't focus on the large groups. I go to the mom and pop. I go to the medium size. You know, and I think of medium in, you know, obviously, Arizona. You've got 10 employees. You're a big employer out here, you know.
That's true. That's true. Okay, so associations need to know about you as well and vice versa. But I think your point is a good one. I probably would have missed that. Each of us, that's the other thing we can do to make sure we're represented, is belong to and actively get our voice heard through the associations that represent our business group, our business area, I am actively involved. As a matter of fact, hopefully on the show in the next few months, we'll have the head of the Arizona Real Estate Investors Association. He doesn't know it. He hasn't got my invitation yet, but I'll definitely try to get him on the show. Yeah. And he's recently started something nationwide, which is the American Rental Property Owners and Landlords Association. Not to get it, it's ARPOLA is the short version of that. So I had to kind of think through the wording. But it started out here in Arizona, but it's going to go U.S.-wide, because when it comes to rental and landlords, there's really no such association. That tends to be just the reals. Yeah, and talk about, you know, major force in trying to fix the housing market. That is the force right now. It's about the only one spine.
Well, I'm going to ask you to make sure he has a lunch meeting with me.
You bet. Yeah.
Because that's the type of groups and individuals that I want, you know, to get in front of the Congress, because you do end up having a very unique perspective of what's happening in the housing market and how it can be fixed.
Yep.
You've got legislation that's going to really, you know, affect you more than any other that we need to be watching or be aware of, that type of thing. And it's a win-win for individuals, businesses. I always strongly encourage them to get involved in the association, business association of their choice that impacts their industry, because it does have a tremendous influence on the congressional staff.
No, I will. I will definitely set that up. You can. I don't know if you heard me scratching here, but I'm while we're talking, and I'm scratching some notes saying, "Hey, I got to get this set up." I just didn't think of that earlier, and it ties in. And here's where I've got to guess share a thank you and kudos to. Let's have our listeners hear it firsthand. After we met, it became obvious to me that, you know, if I'm going to move this TACT program forward, the program that has probably the best chance of fixing the housing market and the banking crisis, the only way I'm going to be able to do it is with getting some of the views back to government and using some help to get the bankers together. And you know, you've been part of that and continue to offer to be part of that, and I am optimistic that with your help we're going to make some pretty good progress. And this ties in, obviously, because the Real Estate Investors Association, the rental property owners, all of that ties in with fixing the housing market. And even though one of Representative Frank's priorities is not the banking and housing, that doesn't mean that we can't, you know, use your help to get that to other agencies as well. And as you said, some of these problems with government agencies, and I had a good contact and a good conversation, by the way, just to update you, with Fannie Mae last week, although I sensed that the person I was talking to was already packing for vacation while we're talking, and then admitted to, by the way, that she would be on vacation in the next week or so. So that she wouldn't be able to deal with the next steps for a while. But frustrating, given that Fannie Mae owns and Freddie Mac owns, you know, literally $1 trillion worth of problem properties. So anyway, long story short, we're making some progress there, and I'm inviting you to rejoin me on some meetings in the near future on that. But many thanks for the help so far. And if you will, the whole spirit of helping business move forward on issues that require, you know, kind of government help.
Yeah, well, thanks. It's what I think what the congressman intended the position to be is, okay, how can we help? And a lot of times it's just being even a liaison for you to get in front of the right people, and for us to stand next to you and say, hey, we want you guys at least pay a little bit of attention to his or her issues, and I mean, we have a limited role, but we do have a role, and we're just trying to explore ways that we can help. So we're open to any suggestions, I guess.
Well, no, on this one, I know exactly how, because we want to keep the government out of trying to some more fixes themselves, but to get out of the way of some of the things we need to do. I guess one of the key, I got a couple, you know, final questions for you, and I have taken a little bit more of your time, and I've asked Pete to extend the show a little bit longer than usual today, just because I knew we'd have a number of topics of interest to our listeners, and that dimension of, you know, every investment is at risk depending on what the government here or elsewhere does. So I think that was a good addition to why this important, you know, topic's so important. But I want to kind of remind each of the folks listening and those that eventually will listen on the archives is that we hear a lot of rhetoric out of Washington, out of our state politicians and local politicians, that small business is the engine of economic growth and job creation. But the reality is that those politicians aren't necessarily walking the talk, as we say. They talk about it being the engine of growth, but that doesn't mean they're really doing something about it. So I think, you know, folks like yourself and everything we can do to encourage other representatives to have a similar person in place and join those associations, I think is going to have a, you know, the impact that we, rather than complaining, we can do something, I guess, is the key message there.
Right. Oh, I think that we can do both. I think we can complain and do something.
Well, and I think so.
We need to do both.
How about some encouraging words for our business people and listeners in general, that from what you see in your role and what you see going on in Washington, are there some encouraging words?
Well, I tell you the most encouraging thing I've seen, and that is the entrepreneurs. I've seen a real spirit of this is hard economic times, but also I've never seen so many startup businesses, and I've heard that from other, you know, other quarters across other associations talking about it, that you know, in the midst of all this difficulty, is boy, the American spirit turns around and says, "Okay, this is difficult times, but it's also an opportunity." And boy, that is real encouraging to see so many startups. I've just been amazed of how many people are in the middle of, you know, their life savings or whatever they're doing to beg, borrow, and steal to start their own companies up at this time. To me, that's a real encouragement. Excuse me.
No, it definitely is, and quite frankly, our producer, Pete Peters, has been coining the phrase entrepreneurial revolution. I had him on the show about a month ago. That's kind of what triggered this whole notion of bringing some folks on to talk more about how the government can help, not just think of the government as being in the way, but I think, you know, roles like yours, as we've said, are along the you know, the helpful side. Well, let me flip it. Now, I don't want to end on a negative note, but what are some of the discouraging things you're seeing? Because there's got to be some frustrations you're running into, or things aren't always heading in the right direction. What are some of those things that get you a little bit worried, or that we should be keeping a lookout for?
Well, I think the congressman has said many times the complacency. We had, you know, from our perspective and from pro-business perspective, had some great victories last election cycle.
Right.
But we're not there. Like I said, we now got back control over the House, barely. The Senate is still up for grabs. And, you know, we've got a president who's not been friendly to the economy or small business or anything. But really, our biggest concern is the complacency out there and the frustration of a lot of people saying, you know, Congress is not even doing what we asked them to do. Let's throw them all out.
Excuse me, but
we really see that the job's not done. And for us to really turn this the economy around, we've got to really change the Senate and the presidency. So we just hope people out there don't get complacent
and give up.
What happened last election cycle? I get frustrated too quickly.
No, good advice. And I think, and again, maybe that's the call to action that each of us need to look at. What can we do in terms of articles and radio shows like this one, but also in getting letters to our congressmen, you know, and encouraging them, senators as well, encouraging them to do some of the things that we talked about in this particular show. You know, we've covered a lot of ground. Are there some parting thoughts you'd like to share with us that maybe I forgot to ask you about, and something like those priorities? I almost forgot at the beginning of the show I should ask right away. But are there some things you'd like to make sure that we touch on before we close here?
Not anything comes to my mind. Just again, I just count it a real privilege to represent Congressman Trent Franks. To me, he's a true patriot. He is a strict constitutionalist. He has voted no on a lot of issues for many years that, you know, we've always looked for a conservative congressman, and he's got a 100% voting record as conservative, most conservative congressmen in Congress. There's only five
right.
other ones that have the same conservative voting record as he does. So he sticks to his guns. There's not, in a lot of ways, we don't have to lobby him and try to convince him of the rightness of the issues that we are concerned about as entrepreneurs and small businessmen and the pro-family, pro-life community, as far as those issues go. But he's a unique representative in that regard. And you know what, though? There can be many more out there if we just find those individuals and then help them get elected and, bring back some real true conservative principles in the Congress. So, but I
well,
count it a real privilege to work for him.
That reminds me of two things, I guess. One is, you know, this whole maybe we should just throw all the Congress out. We've got to be careful not to throw out the good ones in the process. The ones that are working for us, and I would say that Representative Franks is definitely one of those that represent business, that are walking the talk and those things. We definitely don't want to change out. We want more people like them. And I guess the second is maybe something that came to mind earlier and I mentioned is even if the congressman doesn't have that business background, if he surrounded himself or added some people to his staff that are business, not just business friendly, but have that business background to help reach out to the community the way you do, then they can, if you will, steer their own thinking and not be stuck in, you know, their usual way of thinking. So I think from that standpoint, maybe that's the second thing that can happen, even if it's tough to get, you know, good business people to run for political office. Let's at least get business people in working with those politicians in the background to get the business agenda moved forward. Really appreciate that, Mr. Jameson, and many thanks for being with us. And I'll have a couple summary points here for our audience. And I know I've kept you longer than I committed to, but really appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. And hopefully you and I can get together and continue moving forward on some of the things that are on your agenda, too.
We will. We will. I can promise you that. Good. One, and I will be setting up some meetings with those associations, but I think it's very, very important. And by the way, they are fully aware of the things I'm doing and supportive, so maybe there's a little selfish intention in there as well. And I want to get you with the Bankers Association as well, which is one of them that I need to meet with, and we'll try to do that maybe jointly even. So appreciate
Great.
Your time and being with us and the positive feedback and comments you've given us. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Now, let me summarize a couple of the key points here. We all know that small business is the engine of economic growth, and the politicians will agree with that, one of the few things they agree with. But to date, I've only found one that really walks the talk, and that's Representative Trent Franks, the Republican congressman. Happens to be from my district, Arizona's 2nd District. The rest operate as they always did. Remember the old saying, what's good for GM is good for America? Well, I guess GM's bankruptcy maybe put a nail in that coffin. But the U.S. Congress hasn't necessarily changed, nor has the Senate, in the way that they operate. How did you do over the last few weeks with the First Commandment I shared with you? And again, a reminder, if you're not sure what that First Commandment is, the archive is available. Either let me know or just do a search for First Commandment Investing. Let me share, I guess, rather than going into it in detail, basically the market went down and went back up. If you held steady and just said, I'm going to ignore that, that was fine. If you bought on the way down, that was even better, because then it's back up a little bit higher than it was before. But there's another front, and we touched on it a little bit today, which is due to inflation, the precious metals, oil, and foreign currencies are skyrocketing. Some of you might be getting that pain in your stomach, that knot in your stomach I talked about, which says, gee, I really should start buying. This stuff is taking off like crazy, and I'm missing it, or I don't have enough of an investment. I should have invested months ago, and I didn't. I missed that big trend. Do I jump in now? boy, this is a tough one because I'm struggling with the same thing. If you do want to do that, I'll share two bits of advice. One is, it's always better to buy low than it is to buy high, and the prices are high. Will they keep going? Could they go up triple to where they are? Of course they could. So you don't necessarily want to not buy. So the knot in your stomach, generally, you should ignore it. That's usually the time when there's going to be some opportunities in the future that you should be selling when everything else has been rising for so long. Generally, ignoring it is the right thing to do, and historically, it's worked for me. On the flip side, there are ways to step into those investments that are actually lower than they were a couple weeks ago. And those happen to be the mining and exploration stocks. So whether it's gold, silver, oil, all of those, you actually can step into the operating company stocks at prices that are looking pretty attractive. So if you do want to play that gold and silver and really worried about maybe it's just gotten overheated, because it might have, then that might be a way to play it. So that's kind of a tip for today. I don't usually share those with you, but since we talked so much about the first commandment and how do I take advantage of buying low and selling high, some of you might be having that knot in your stomach. Again, general advice is to ignore it. On the other hand, there are ways to play it when the prices are actually down. Let me remind you about our next Wealth DNA radio show. It's the second Monday of May. That's Monday, May 9th, 8 o'clock Arizona time. Same place, same time. And if you haven't received emails reminding you about this show, send an email to ron@wealthdna.us. We'll keep you posted about future shows and events. Or click on the follow button in that upper left-hand side, and you'll automatically get emails. Our guest on the next show is Michael de Hoestelaar. That's going to be a tough one to spell, isn't it? Michael de Hoestelaar. He's a business analyst with Arizona's SBDC. SBDC is very little known. Another little known and underutilized government-sponsored group. Yes, he's from the government. He's here to help. And by the way, he's free. You see, the SBDC are business consultants to small business. And they're free. You didn't know about that? Well, then maybe next week's show, or 2 weeks from now, the next show will be a place you want to tune into. They do have some courses that require some minimal investment, but quite frankly, before you run out and hire a business consultant, you'll want to call these guys. What do they do? Who do they work with? What types of projects? How much time can you get? Those are the questions we'll be asking and have answered. So join us. That's May 9th at 8 o'clock. Also, the next Learn to Earn a Higher Return seminar will also be in 2 weeks. It's the very next day, May 10th at 10:15, held at Entrust. Again, send me an email if you're not in tune to those things or hearing about them regularly. The email is ron@wealthdna.us. I'll send you the address. In the meantime, take a look at some of the ways your government can help you, like our guest today. Boy, reach out to folks like that. Find them. Ask for them. You're paying your taxes. Get to know the services. And we'll do our part to get you to know some of where to find them. Happy investing, and take full advantage of the first commandment. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ronald, Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.